Comments made on the Serotalk Podcast Network are those of the individuals and do not represent Serotalk Corporation, its staff, management, board of directors, or third-party resellers.
Welcome back, everyone, to CSUN 2013, covered by the Serotalk Podcast Network. I'm Joe Steinkamp.
And I'm Ricky Inger.
You know, we were able to have two presentations from CSUN, and the first one was more of a demo kind of situation, and we didn't necessarily capture that for the podcast, but it did involve RIM, didn't it, Ricky?
It did, Remote Incident Manager, where you can train and troubleshoot and make your end users happy right from the comfort of your home or office. And it doesn't even matter which assistive technology they're using on the other end. You'll be able to take care of them with no problems at all. You can get more information about RIM at www.serotech.com, and you can check out the Enterprise Products section of the site.
And if you're listening to this podcast before April 1st, 2013, there's something neat that you could actually take advantage of.
Yes, indeed you can. RIM is already quite an affordable product, but from now through March 30th, it's even more affordable. You can get it for almost half off the normal price, so you definitely want to check that out.
So remember that you can use this software to be able to connect to just about any screen reader in Windows or no screen reader at all. It's wonderful stuff, and be sure to check out our website to learn more. Now, the other presentation that we did at CSUN involved a more general topic, such as accessibility on a budget.
How in the world do you find what the best accessible tools are for the people that you're serving? How can you become an expert on those things? And perhaps most importantly, how can you do it in a way that is affordable for you and your consumer? In this talk, Joe and I share all about how you might be able to do that using things like social media, building professional networks, and we even talk a little bit about products from Serotech.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Welcome to Serotalk Podcast 140. Oh, wait. I think I'm in the wrong place. No, we're in the right place. Thank you for attending our session today. We're going to be talking about accessibility on a budget. And essentially, we're going to be talking about how you choose the right free and low-cost assistive technology for whatever it is that you're looking to do and how you're able to find that sort of thing. We will be talking about the Serotalk podcast and some things that Serotech, our company, does. And perhaps we should introduce ourselves. I'm Ricky Inger. I'm from Serotech. And you, sir, are...
Oh, me. You mean me. Sorry, I missed that cue card. My name is Joe Steinkamp, and I'm also with Serotech. Been with the company for a couple of years. But prior to that, I slipped and hit my head, was in voc rehab for 10 years. And during that time, I was an assistive technology consultant and assessment individual. So I am familiar with working with consumers and finding individual needs to unique solutions for work outcomes.
So one of the first things that you have to consider when you're looking for assistive technology or even mainstream technology that does what you want, whether you are looking for yourself or you're looking for somebody else, you have to think about what the needs are. What need are you trying to fill? So it's one thing to say, there's this one magic tool that does everything for everyone. And
there is.
Sadly, hate to break it to you, but no, such a thing does not exist. We don't have a tool that can do everything for everyone, regardless of what their needs are. So you have to first start out by defining the need that you're trying to address.
So one of the ways to look at it is, say, like the old school Mr. Rogers. Remember, Mr. Rogers would come in from outside, he'd sit down and change his shoes and put on a different sweater, and then we'd go to the land of make-believe. In some ways, that's almost the same way we have to look at it, because we have to try different tool sets and different things to fit different needs, and sometimes that could be like wearing a pair of sneakers at work and a pair of sneakers at home. So one solution you might recommend or work with might fit better in a home environment than it would in an environment that would be more tailored for a work environment. Some of that will break down to who your consumer is and how much they're able to grasp. If they're new to blindness or low vision, they might be in a situation of task specific. They might be overwhelmed by learning all these crazy keys. And they might find that touch screens are easier because I didn't have to learn all those crazy keys. And in some cases, that might be a good fit. But again, vocationally, it might not. For someone who is more what we used to call in the industry a long time ago, a homemaker, those people would work much better with built-in solutions, with things that come in, let's say, VoiceOver on the Mac, or in a situation, maybe possibly the full-screen magnification that's already inside Windows might be enough to be able to get that person into where they're going. But it might not be enough to move them on into the world of work.
And then you have those people who are huge technology enthusiasts, and they may use more than one platform. They may travel quite extensively. You may travel quite extensively if you're doing research for yourself. So when you're looking at solutions, you might say, well, I might be on Windows, I might be on a Mac, I might be on an iPhone, and I might be on an Android at any given point in time. So looking at solutions that are cross-platform can be really important in a situation like that. But we've talked about kind of what to look for and what to think about whenever you're researching assistive technology. But how do you do this when so far we haven't found a way to pause time? So there's approximately 24 hours in a day, and there doesn't seem to be enough time and resources to get everything that you need to do done. A lot of times research seems very daunting. You're looking at, okay, I've got to go read a bunch of papers, and then I have to download a demo of all of these programs and become something of an expert on each of them so that I can make wise decisions as I recommend things for purchase. And then I fly out to conferences where people demonstrate some of these things, and sometimes there just isn't a lot of time to do that. So how do you address that?
And some people in the community can end up being some of the best ways to be able to do that. Remember that your best person to be able to provide the resources that you need to make the qualified assessment of your person that you're working with, it can actually come from the community itself, because right now the way that assistive technology is fragmenting and going in different directions, you may have to rely on a resource like, let's say, applevis.com, applevis.com, where people are rating apps or talking about changes in apps or doing things to tell you about what's working best when iOS 6. Whatever comes out. And relying on people who are living in that particular space will help you a great deal, because it's very difficult now to train up very quickly in a certain situation. So you want to find tastemakers and influencers who can kind of give you the overshot, or you can ask one question, I've got a certain situation with this person in this environment, what's the good and the bad, what should I look out for when training this individual?
And there are a lot of different ways to get in touch with the people that you need to get information from. It's not like a while back when technology was somewhat in its infancy and we weren't nearly as connected as we are now. Right now you have several options. You can look at social media like Twitter and Facebook, because you're going to find a number of different people there, not just professionals who might be in the same field that you are, if you are, say, a trainer or a voc rehab professional. So you can network with other professionals who do the same things that you do, and you can actually speak with other people who use the assistive technology themselves. And Twitter and Facebook, that's a good way to catch up with both those groups, and you can build your social networks over time. Podcasts are another really nice way to do this, because you can listen to podcasts on your commute, you can listen to them at home or wherever you happen to be. And the cool thing is that there are a number of different types of podcasts. You have some people whose passion is just to demonstrate and review assistive technology, and they may not be in the assistive technology field at all. They're just looking to get the word out about something that they themselves enjoy, so they produce their own podcasts. Then, of course, you have companies who do this. Assistive technology companies will produce podcasts that showcase their own product. So you're hearing from the experts at the company about what does this product do, how do I use it, who is it for, how can I get it?
The weird thing is that you have to strike a balance. So if you listen to Freedom Scientific's FSCast or the new Dolphin Access podcast or even our own podcast from Serotech through the Serotech Podcast Network, you're getting one side of a story. So finding out these local resources, looking on Twitter, looking online, looking through certain websites, following through on that to get a juxtaposition of what it's like for the actual user beyond what's coming in a package demo. That's always the key, because you want to be able to have one foot in what the company is saying is the best part about their software or hardware, but you want to have another foot in the ground for what it's like with the user experience, what it's going to be like after that person has the equipment, I've set it up, and I've walked out of the room, what's going to come next. And having that balance is the weird part. So resources on both sides is what we're talking about today, so you can get that kind of information rather quickly.
And ideally, you can find podcasts from experts in the field who aren't necessarily affiliated with a particular company, but their job is to talk about and report on assistive technology. For example, there's the AT Tips Cast, which is geared specifically toward education, K through 12, what types of assistive technology is available for this group. There's also the Easter Seals Crossroads group with the In Data podcast. Wade Wingler and his team also talk about a variety of assistive technology, and they don't focus specifically on blind and low vision, nor does AT Tips Cast. Both of these are pretty wide-ranging, so you could talk about everything from switches to hearing aids, amplifiers, and screen readers and the like. And then, of course, there's the this one podcast that I heard one time, or maybe two.
Really?
Yeah, it's called Serotalk.
I've never heard of that.
No, it has. No. There's this one guy, Joe Steinkamp. He's on there.
He's a loud mouth.
Yeah, definitely. He rarely stops talking.
Okay, wait. Y'all didn't have
Somebody
to agree with
agree
that.
Somebody didn't have to agree that quickly.
And you did that rather quickly and too readily. That was, wow. That was meant to be a joke. I'm scratching that off the next person.
Is there one of the best podcasters?
Oh, okay.
All right. But with Serotalk, our aim, and with the other shows on the Serotalk Podcast Network, even though we work for Serotech, which is an assistive technology company, we're also consumers of assistive technology, and not just our own products. We also use mainstream technology that just happens to be accessible. And so again, our aim with Serotalk, as with the other podcasts that we've mentioned, is to take an unbiased look at what's out there, help the people who are listening to get an overview of how things work without having to do the downloading of 7,000 demos and spending several hours becoming an expert on something in particular. Rather, we would want to go to the companies and perhaps get them to speak on the podcast, or we look at this stuff ourselves and say, hey, this works great in this particular use case, and maybe not so much in that one.
And we've expanded that over time. We initially did Serotalk and then worked that into 6 currently running series, one of them being High Contrast, which is a series about people with low vision, adjusting to low vision, what it's like to have low vision, how you can move from one place to another, what it is like to shop. Maury Hill from AI Squared and Jeremy Curry from GW Micro, along with Rodney Egger, are on that podcast. And it's very brave in that Maury talks about her stem cell trial research that she's undergoing, and actually told a story about when her family sat her down and took the keys away. So those kinds of life skills come into play as well, because it's not always about the technology. It's about how someone relates to the technology, how they form that bond, and how they have an interdependency on that technology. We also have a wonderful application that allows you to find all of that information in one spot. You might have heard of it. iBlink Radio? Ah, yes. iBlink Radio, available for iOS and Android. And you have the ability not just to hear our stuff on the front page, but you also have over 60 streaming radio stations, 45 streaming radio stations, 60 podcasts, and radio reading services. Serotech is a member of the International Association of Audio Information Specialists, by the way, that's IAAIS. who are a membership of radio stations such as Sight Into Sound in Houston and others that provide newspapers and other reading periodicals there. So the idea behind iBlink Radio was to be an aggregation site because we recognized that there wasn't a really good place for the community to find information all at one place. And it's a great place to start if you're newly blinded. You can find out very quickly that you're not alone, that there are hundreds of people doing amazing things at one time that may inspire you, be it cooking in the dark, or be it somebody who's doing an information cast like Neil Ewers and talks about a recorder for 2.5 hours and blows my mind when he does that. So there's all sorts of information there that you can do and consume at your own time when you have that available.
The other thing about the podcast that I like is that you guys also are very interactive with them. You know, you encourage people to get involved in even the app itself. You can submit an iReport, and it's really easy.
I think it's essential to do that because we understand that it's not just about our opinions and how we feel about particular AT or particular mainstream solutions. It's really about building a community because each of us has had experiences that other people can benefit from, and each of us has ideas that other people can benefit from. And as those people respond and say, hey, I've been there too, and here's what I did to overcome that, we all can learn from that interaction in the community. And so that's one of the reasons why we're so passionate about bringing these resources together, because it's not just about having the information. It's about interacting with the people who have the information and watching that grow organically as more and more people get involved.
And as part of the community ourselves, being a corporation that has 95% blind and visually impaired people inside it, we recognize that in some cases, the best solution may not always be our solution. We hope that it is, but we also recognize that in a certain situation, in certain job conditions, that might be one of our competitors. And we interview our competitors, invite them to come on our program, talk about their products, because we as the community recognize that. We all work for a living. And we want others to work for a living. That's how we ourselves will improve the community. And being able to provide that information for you unbiasedly and let you make that decision is an informed choice. And that's what we truly believe in. And it's in our culture.
It is indeed in our culture. And in fact, Saratech is built on the idea that since the company is comprised of, pretty much 95% blind and visually impaired people, we wanted to build things that were useful to us because the idea was if I need this technology, if I have a need for, say, scanning a document or doing something remotely with someone or having a simple screen reader that I can use even if I'm really intimidated by the computer or I'm showing someone who is intimidated by technology, we want to build that because the assumption is, hey, if we like it and we're blind people, then chances are at least some other people are going to like it and need it as well. One of the things that Saratech has developed is the System Access screen reader. And we're talking today about low-cost AT solutions, and now we're going to focus on some that we have built ourselves. The idea at Saratech was to build things that would be accessible, meaning not just usable by a blind or visually impaired person, but accessible in the sense that there's a chance they can get their hands on it on their own. They don't necessarily need to look for outside support to pay for this technology that's so important. We wanted to put it within everyone's reach, not just a select group of people. So with System Access, we looked at designing the screen reader and said, we need something that is easily usable for somebody who's brand new to a computer. A lot of times, that's a very daunting experience to walk up to this machine with all these buttons and hear the chattering coming out of the speakers and think, wow, how am I ever going to learn to use that? There's a lot to learn about using an operating system, using Microsoft Office, using the tools that you need to do a job. or perhaps just to stay entertained or keep up with the news and that kind of thing. So given that there's so much to learn about Windows itself, why add some complexity to that with a screen reader? Let's make it easy enough to use that it kind of does what it needs to in the background without a whole lot of user intervention.
And one of the things that we recognize is that there is no one tool to rule them all anymore. There is no one ring solution. And so you can look at other opportunities such as Narrator within Windows 8, which is really improved a lot, or NVDA, non-visual desktop access. But what can happen is in those situations is that they're reliant upon a trainer, if it's somebody who's low task specific, or they're having to rely on a community situation. And for some people, that doesn't necessarily work. So with the idea that we have low cost solutions that would work for the individual if they choose not to go through an agency for purchase, we also have support. And the support is from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, because we also recognize, as blind working people ourselves, then you might not necessarily be able to get home, get in front of that computer, and be able to use that computer to simulate the problem that you're trying to report. There's a term that Microsoft uses, and it's called eating your own dog food. And what that means is that the equipment that you're making is something you use in-house, and you use it constantly, so that way you're familiar with it. And through situations that we've encountered over time, we've developed remote software solutions that allows us to troubleshoot another computer, and allows us to troubleshoot it if it has JAWS, NVDA, WinWise, or something else on board. So that way we can help that consumer fix their problem, because it may not necessarily be our software that's causing an issue, but we still want to help that individual so they can do what they need to do.
By the way, with System Access, there is also built-in magnification up to 6x. It is meant as sort of an enhancement to speech rather than a strict magnification piece of software, but that is there. And numerous options to purchase System Access. If you're purchasing it outright, it's a little less than half of the cost of traditional AT. And then there are monthly plans that you can look at as well. And we'll discuss those a little bit at the end of the presentation. One of the things that all of us as blind and visually impaired people deal with is, hey, there's that big stack of mail over there and somebody's got to go through it. And, look, the boss just gave handouts to everyone talking about what's going to be discussed in the meeting tomorrow and so on. And there's got to be a way to access that stuff. And what about the giant 400-page PDF that someone sends you and it's image only? There's no OCR, no text in that PDF. Now what are you going to do?
I went into their office and I removed the lights from all their light outlets.
That'll teach them.
And rearrange their desk.
There you go. But you still have that PDF that you had to scan eventually, right? So what do you do in a situation like that? And especially, how do you handle it when you don't necessarily just need the document on your own computer? You might have time to scan this PDF at home, but you don't have time to read it yet. And you have this 2-hour train ride ahead of you. And wouldn't it be nice if you could just read that document that you just spent all this time scanning rather than having it back at home on your computer? Yeah, I'd say that would be pretty cool. So with DocuScan Plus, you can do that. You can have it wherever life takes you.
Oh, that's a good one. Write that one down.
Yeah.
So one of the things that we've recognized is that a lot of people are becoming dual or tri-operating system friendly. And we're seeing that in our community. And through conversations that we've had with partners like Vision Australia and others, we recognize that people are purchasing a Mac for home and using Windows at work. And so with DocuScan Plus, you're able to have the ability to scan on either platform, save to the cloud, and read on either platform for that person who wants to be able to have a Mac at home but still have to use that thing at Windows up at work. Better yet, they can access that through the internet. If they don't have DocuScan Plus installed on that particular Windows machine, they can actually go to DocuScanPlus.com, be able to access that software, or even scan from the computer there and save it back in the cloud so they could read it at home on Windows or their iPhone or iPad. In October, we actually moved to a mobile philosophy in which you're able to read that data on the iPhone and iPad through SamNet Connect through iBlink Radio. Because we believe also that in a, I hate this term, post-PC era.
Start counting buzzwords. Everybody take a drink of water every time he says one.
So after people are moving into mobile devices, we recognize that that's the way a lot of people are going to consume the data, even if it is just to quickly glance at it, rather than to do content creation.
Are you doing other languages by now in Dr. Scan Plus, or is it just English still?
It is still currently only English. However, do stay tuned for...
Nothing to announce today.
Yes.
But stay tuned. I can't be more cryptic than that.
Well, you could be slightly more mysterious,
okay.
Maybe.
Okay.
But,
yes. What is the web resident version?
What this is, and you can do this, by the way, with both System Access and DocuScan Plus, we wanted to develop something that somebody could walk into a coffee shop or the hotel business center, or they could go to a friend's house. And traditionally, if you wanted to use a computer that wasn't your own, you had to ask permission from the IT staff or your friend or whatever, and then the answer is usually, we don't really understand what that talking stuff is, and so we don't want it on this PC. No, you can't install that. So why not have something where you can visit a website, click a begin button, and then get prompted via speech to run an executable that, again, is only running in current memory. It's not installing anything, but it is still a fully functional version of the software that you would have installed on your desktop. So you just launch it from the web browser, and when you're finished, you can close it, and there's nothing left behind on that computer so that the next time somebody starts it up, it begins talking again.
So imagine our surprise when Microsoft announced that with Office 2 Go this year, with Office 2013, because you could actually walk up to a computer, log into Microsoft, and do something very similar and get Office, Word, PowerPoint, and other programs streaming down to your computer. This is very much the same concept in which you're able to have that software where you need it, when you need it, and then when you reboot the system, it's gone. And it's perfect when you have to go to your parents' house for Thanksgiving and troubleshoot their computer and you didn't bring your CD or executable with your software on it and all of that stuff. The idea was that we were mobile again and going to different places, and we saw a need ourselves for these tools in the field and from working with our partners, and we developed that so it was easy to do. And we could also save that onto a thumb drive, which we actually were doing that way, way back in, 2006, 2000?
Yeah, quite some time ago, 2006.
So you would take a U3 drive at the time and plug it in, and then it would auto-start and bring up the screen magnification and screen reader if that's what you required. We've moved that to regular USB drives, like most of our friends in the industry. But we are always looking as users ourselves to fill the need that we hear from our customers.
One incredibly important thing I want to mention as we talk about being so mobile and being able to access everything that we need from wherever we are, something that sometimes we don't think about is, okay, maybe you can access your data from wherever you are, but isn't it a pain every time you start the screen reader on a different computer to then have to configure it to, you know, speed up the speech by 200%, let's crank up the magnification to 3x, let's turn off punctuation, that kind of thing.
Escape out of the startup wizard.
There you go. It's time consuming to have to configure this stuff every time whenever you want to use it. So with all of the Saratech products, not just System Access or DocuScan Plus, any piece of Saratech software that you have, your settings are going to go with you. So if you have things configured a certain way at home and you've taken a lot of time to do that and make sure that things are functioning as efficiently as you like, now whenever you do go to that friend's house or business center or coffee shop, whatever, those settings are right there with you.
Where are you with System Access screen reader wise, like access to stuff on Windows compared to NVDA? I mean, I know these cloud-based things, but as a screen reader, say Access, Windows, Office, what have you, where are you now in comparison to NVDA?
our most important job as a company, understanding that we can't be all things to all people, is to look around and say, what do most people need in most situations? So you might have something like, say, Access database program. A lot of corporations don't use it. So we say, if somebody's going to use Access, they should probably use a different tool. However, when you look at Excel or PowerPoint, people are developing things with those applications all the time, and of course Microsoft Word. So that's an incredibly important piece of technology that we need to support. And we do so very well. So while I can't break down an exact comparison for every task between, say, NVDA and System Access, I can say that if you look at what is most commonly being used in the business or consumer world, System Access is going to concentrate on that and not so much on perhaps the more obscure technologies. There are certainly other tools that are very, very well suited for that. But your specific question about Office, we do work very well there. And of course, Windows 8, we work very well in that environment as well. So no concerns about upgrading to the latest operating system and not having the latest and greatest support. Web browsing is actually a place where System Access shines. And we do that because it seems more and more things are becoming web-based, whether it's entertainment or whether it's something corporate. And you walk into the corporation, they have their intranets that are built with HTML and other web-based technologies rather than having a standalone application to do all that stuff. So the web is where we really concentrate our efforts.
And I'd like to jump on top of what Ricky is saying. NVDA is a wonderful project, and we support them and have on the podcast, and we've always promoted that as another tool in the toolbox for, say, something like Mozilla, which is, well, by the time we walk out of this room, I think we'll be up more two more versions. So the nature of your question has changed. Anybody in this has an iPhone in this room knows that they get about 35 updates a week. And how we measure a screen reader now has changed dramatically. As someone who used to do assessments for 10 years, I ran out of the state environment, I mean, faster than lightning, because I saw what was coming, and that a test is only a test the day you did the test. And that you can't necessarily say this screen reader is doing X, any of us in this industry now, because Facebook will push an update to only 1% of its membership. And because they do that in a light rollout, if a customer comes to us and says, I'm having a problem on Facebook, we literally almost have to remote into that machine because none of us can replicate it, even as a developer. So understand that as Microsoft was preparing Windows 8, they were turning things on 2 weeks before the actual RTM, the final release date of Windows 8, because everybody wants to copy Apple. Everybody wants to have that one big 24-hour news cycle. In assistive technology, we've always been the barnacle on the side of a beautiful ship. And some days the water is above us, and some days the water is below us. But we have to find a way to hold on, because the definition of access is changing in front of us. This is blue ocean, and none of us have ever been here before. What I will say about NV Access is that support, what is the phone number for them? Okay? They're great with email, and they have a wonderful community. But we're saying that we can work with you, we can work alongside you, we have a phone number, and we're looking for those people who are new to blindness. We're looking for those people who are not ready to take on an enthusiast software and start playing with plugins and some of the aspects of that software. So I just wanted to follow up behind your question and be able to provide some information of our mindset of how we look at it. We use it ourselves internally. But we also recognize that in certain situations, and again, I point to Firefox because Mozilla and NV have a good relationship there, that that's going to work really well, and that's probably where you might want to think in a low-cost solution first. If you have someone who loves Firefox over, say, Internet Explorer or another alternative operating system/browser.
Okay.
Are you in Chrome as well?
We do support Chrome, yes. Okay. And in fact, support for Chrome is also pretty important on the Mac side of things, where obviously we don't support Chrome ourselves because we don't have a screen reader there. We do, however, have the SAMNet service, which is our community-based service with email and news and weather and all sorts of things. You can use Chrome to access those services on the Mac. Stepping back to NVDA and other assistive technologies for a moment, we understand that while Saratech does build some pretty cool stuff in terms of screen readers, scanning software, that kind of thing, we aren't the only game in town. There are people who choose other things, and those people still need to be supported. Somebody may choose WindowEyes because it's the perfect tool with its scripting language to work in a particular corporate environment. So now, how do we go about supporting those people regardless of what assistive technology they're using? Or in fact, if they're using any assistive technology at all, how could you, as a blind trainer or IT professional, support this group? So now that everybody's made their choice of AT or no AT or what have you, we have a tool that will allow you to accessibly remote to their machine. This is exclusively for Windows. So if you're looking to support Macs, there are ways to do that, not particularly elegant yet, but there's the remote, I forget what it's called on the Mac, but what people tend to do is remote into the machine and then have the person turn on VoiceOver and turn up their speakers really loud. Okay, can you move it closer to the microphone? Can't hear that.
MacTrainingForTheBlind.com, John Paranorisi, who's one of our hosts on Triple Click Home, does some demonstrations of that, in fact, and that is a great resource if you want to learn more about remoting in. John is a trainer who does primarily Mac training and actually has talked about that on our Triple Click Home show, TripleClickHome.com.
For Windows, though, we have Saratech's Remote Incident Manager, and the idea behind this is to be completely screen reader agnostic. We don't care what you're using at the other end here of this connection. We just want to make sure that we can connect and you can accessibly support that machine, and you can watch what the end user is doing as well. So you're in a shared session. There's voice over IP communication there. And it's an incredible way to, again, be in a shared session and provide troubleshooting or training. I do want to mention that between now and March 30th, the RIM software is actually almost half its normal price. You can get this for $59.95 per month with a $99 setup fee, or $5.99 per year with a setup fee. And again, this is almost half the cost that it is normally, so you definitely want to jump on that before March 30th. It's going to allow you to support any Windows machine that you come in contact with, whether you're fixing something for your mother who doesn't need assistive technology, or you're connecting to somebody who has JAWS 8.0 and they haven't updated their screen reader in quite some time, but they still need a little help, you know, you'll be able to work with them. In addition to remotely connecting to computers, how do you remotely connect to people? What can you do if you had a message to get out to a group of people, perhaps in a classroom or a conference situation just like this? What if we weren't able to be right in this room together? Or what if you all wanted to see the content that I'm displaying on the screen here in addition to me going blah, blah, blah about that content? What do we have? How can we do that? Saratech's accessible event allows you to do webinars, classroom type situations. It can work as a standalone program, or you can use it alongside something like Adobe Connect or GoToMeeting. And the idea is that you're able to send not only your audio and video out to people, but they can view the content accessibly in their browsers as well. They can come in from an iOS device or a Mac iPad, or certainly a desktop or laptop computer, and they can read what's on the screen just as a sighted person would do from a projector.
And we actually use that software ourselves in our monthly podcast, Saraspectives, which is every first Thursday of the month, where we get people from the community to talk about what's going on. So beyond our Saratalk podcast network hosts, we reach out to end users and have them come on and give their take about the month's events in assistive technology. And we do that through Accessible Event, and we have chat within the window. So it gets really lively to have conversations, pushing content, people in the chat talking live, and Lisa Salinger, our coworker, actually reading the chat and giving us questions in real time. And of course, we're reading Twitter and other things. And it becomes a really good community event as well. And again, like Ricky was saying, that's available through iPad, through iOS, and you're able to actually follow along if you're traveling and not next to a computer, which is going to be a use case you're going to run into more and more and more as telecommuting becomes more cost effective.
No. Is it just going to have an image of what's on the screen, or is someone going to be putting it in a text format?
What happens is that you get both. So you want this to be appealing for both blind and sighted participants,
correct,
and captioning is also supported. So you'll have an image on the screen of the PowerPoint slide, including the logos and all the happy visual stuff that people love to include in those. And beyond that, you're also going to have this PowerPoint slide or Excel spreadsheet or a document or web page just be represented in HTML in the web browser.
So manipulate the text.
Right, so correct, there's no big learning curve. If anybody is used to using their particular assistive technology, they've got a braille display or they have speech, you know, they have a screen reader, what have you, if they can browse the web, then they're going to be accustomed to reading this content. If you're looking at, say, an Excel spreadsheet, it's going to present this as an HTML data table, so you would navigate it just as you would any other table on a website.
Does the end user purchase it or the presenter? The
presenter does purchase it. It's available in day passes or monthly or yearly installments. You can go to accessibleevent.com to learn more about that. And the presenter will purchase the software, set up the meeting, and then send out a meeting code to all of the participants who are going to join via Accessible Event.
And one of the neat features that we added to Accessible Event is the ability to assign roles. You may have someone within your organization who's, like my friend Michael Barber here, not very technically inept at some things.
Right.
Now he's going to hate me. Full disclosure, Mr. Barber and I serve on the Assistive Technology Trainers Board for the National Federation of the Blind, so I'll get it back in spades. Anyway, so you can actually support other individuals so they don't push content. They literally just show up and talk if that's all you need. And you can assign the ability for some of the more complicated stuff to a TA or someone who's along for the ride. And they don't even have to talk. So you actually can control the roles of how you want data to be presented so you can put the right person in the right place to provide the best presentation.
You can also have somebody doing a video interpreter. So their role is just to have video. The presenters may be talking, and you'll have this video box in the top right-hand corner of the screen for those who don't read captioning or just prefer to look at that video interpreter. And they can have that role, and then you can have somebody just taking questions from the audience.
And you can archive that. Again, we use that technology for our own podcasts, and you can see that at serotalk.com, serotalk.com. And that actually has some of our archives of our Saraspective series.
So essentially, we've covered the things that we wanted to today in general, talking about how to research what assistive technology is out there rather than just choosing what the most popular item is and saying, well, this person uses it, so it must be good for everybody. Once you've done that, once you've looked at social media, podcasts, apps like iBlink Radio that can aggregate podcasts together, getting involved in the community through users' forums, voice chat, that kind of thing, there are so many different ways to learn about what AT is out there and what mainstream technology is out there that is appropriate for each type of individual. And then, of course, we talked about Saratech's own products for addressing some of these needs. So now I'd like to open up the floor for any additional questions that didn't get asked during the presentation. They all fell asleep.
They had questions during the presentation.
Question about SAMNet and DocuScan, since it's using a temporary store EXE. Mm-hmm. Have you guys been able to approach the VA or Department of Defense with their rigid security? Because I've tried it with the VA systems, and because it does run as ECMAL, security says, nope, have a nice day.
Yeah, and we have done that in one VA organization, but of course they're all just a little bit different.
Yes.
And it's one of those things that we kind of have to approach on a case-by-case basis, because as we figure out ways to still be able to run in a very secure environment, then people are saying, oh, they've just figured out a way to run in this very secure environment. Maybe we should make this a little more secure than it was. So it's kind of security policies change all of the time, and we do our best to keep up with those things while still maintaining safety for the user and the network. And so we just address each of those things on a case-by-case basis. And the ones that you're talking about are definitely some of the more secure locked down networks. I mean, Department of Defense, yeah, you're lucky you can do anything on the network there. But if you're having an issue like that, we're always happy to interface with the IT people in that particular network situation and figure out a way that's good and secure for everybody.
Yeah, and our partners like the Federal Communications Commission use Accessible Event, and some other federal agencies that I can't name, they actually will change. So one that's in DOD might not necessarily follow the same ones under Homeland Security. So like Ricky was saying, it really depends on each entity, because we'll then have to go under code review for each one because of their various levels of where they fit on the chart. So one executable might work better because this is more open on these ports, and this one might be just, no. We'll have to have a conversation with it. But like Ricky said, because that's so unique and specific, if you have some questions or if you have an example, we could work with you on that to be able to interface with that person. Because we may have a contact there that we can't divulge.
Yeah.
Anybody else?
Louis.
Yes, mm-hmm. Question. Since we're talking about affordable things, and you have some people who, through whatever reasons, aren't getting the services to rehab and their students, can you elaborate about, and I don't know anything about this, it was just brought to my attention that Saratech does offer these remote services for students.
Mm-hmm.
We have two programs that we can talk about. One is kids K-12. Another is our SAMNet Vets program, so we'll talk about that, because both of those are free.
Yeah, so for kids K-12, they can get system access on a thumb drive for free for as long as they are in the K-12 system. And this is pretty cool to have this on a thumb drive, because now the student can carry it to a computer lab, they can carry it home, because sometimes the school may buy AT, but the parents can't, and vice versa. Sometimes the parents may buy something, but the school is not outfitted with AT. So kids can carry this in their pocket and have a screen reader wherever they happen to be and be able to do classwork and that kind of thing. And for SAMNet vets, anyone who has served in the U.S. military and qualifies for services through the Blinded Veterans Association can have access to the SAMNet service, which again is our community service with radio, recipes, entertainment, users forums, email, voice chat, so much that I can't even name. They'll get lifetime access to this SAMNet program, assuming that they meet the qualifications. So certainly pass that information along to anyone who can benefit.
And again, that's our philosophy. Being blind ourselves, we understand that children may get caught up in the cracks of, we can't afford that update this year, and I know you need that to be able to use the latest software that your teacher's recommending. We've been there ourselves, and so that's why we're committed to the K-12 program, KK-12 program. And then we were very honored this past year to be a part of the Blinded Veterans Association National Convention, and we're going to do that again this year and partner with them and provide our podcast coverage to their exhibit hall the same way that we are providing podcast coverage of CSUN 2013, and we've done that for several years. For those who can't come to the meeting, we still want them to know about the latest and greatest. So after Ricky and I are done, we'll walk the floor and interview those on the floor, put those up. They're already streaming on SPN Radio through iBlink. But we'll do that at a couple events like we always do for NFB, ACB convention. But BVA was very, very wonderful to us, and we were happy to meet those veterans and be able to talk about SAM vets, because we wouldn't be standing here if it wasn't for their service.
What is it, like, for your scanning, what engine do you guys use?
We use the same engine that is used in the OmniPage program. So that is the base engine. We do, of course, add a little secret sauce behind the scenes. Based on that engine, we do some of our own tweaks, but that's the Nuance engine we use. Sorry?
It comes out fairly clean.
It does. Now,
I mean, it was all
yeah, all, there's always that really faded fax that was folded up in somebody's pocket and got washed, and you're going to have some problems with that. But in general, yes, you get a very nice clean scan that maintains table formatting and that sort of thing as well.
And along those lines, we look at it from working with somebody who's newly blinded or somebody who's just entering the world of assistive technology. So as you scan that document, at the bottom of the page are going to be easy, tabbable to find buttons that allows you to move that document to the cloud or save it locally or send it to a Victor Reader stream in the case of Windows, because we support all the DAISY book players. So you have the ability to carry that information and read it offline and elsewhere as you're traveling, or if
you can convert it to Braille.
You can convert to Braille, correct.
And DAISY. And MP3.
See what I'm saying about the feature list? And if you're on your iPad, you can email it to somebody. Like, I've got the conference schedule. Oh, I'd love to have it. Okay, I'm going to email it to you from right here within my iPad through the scanned document I have up in the cloud, which is something I've had to do.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, you couldn't use a mobile device to scan with, correct?
I'm sorry, ma'am?
Do you have an app that you can use to scan with a mobile device?
Correct. You're just accessing previously scanned documents on a mobile device, but not currently scanning from the device, right?
What scanners does it support?
That's a good question, because it's one of those with a very generic answer. It's pretty much any TWAIN-compliant scanner. And in the time since DocuScan Plus has been released, I think we've had two scanners that didn't initially work or had some issues. Both of them had automatic document feeders, and the customers reported that the scanner wasn't working properly with DSP, and we worked to make that happen. But generally, any TWAIN compliant scanner, the one that we really, really like is the Canon LIDE line of scanners. You have a 110 and a 210, and the reason there are lots of older Canon scanners as well that work very well, but we like these LIDE scanners because they are completely plug and play. You can plug them into any computer, and Windows Update is going to find the appropriate drivers for that scanner. It's very, very light, so it's easy to slide into a backpack, and it has great accuracy when scanning.
And to speak to the Mac side, I use a Kodak E6100 wirelessly. So I wirelessly scan to my iMac. And just so you know, we'll let you in on a little secret. We actually will use the iSight camera on your Mac. If you can hold the paper up to it, you can do that.
We don't recommend that you do it if you want.
And it works a lot better on the new high-definition cameras. But we were afraid during testing that somebody would go, why don't you support that camera? And so we said, okay, fine, there it is.
I'm Michael Barber here.
Yes, Mr. Barber.
I will, even though you said those terrible things about me, I will say I am a regular user of DocuScan Plus.
You are, sir.
I am. And I think And I've had occasion to test PDF recognition on that, on this one and two of the other major OCR packages that we all know. And I believe that DocuScan Plus does the best job.
Fantastic.
On this, I really do. I did a 990 PDF file that was submitted to me, and I didn't get quite accurate information on another OCR package, but on DocuScan Plus, it was wonderful. And I've done batch scanning, I've done just single page scanning, and save files to MP3. It just really is a good piece of software.
And we didn't pay him a thing to say any of that.
I actually had a DocuScan question for you.
Sure.
Yes.
I was wondering, because I know that you support with system access some Braille displays, and of course it supports on the Mac, but is there any Braille support for DocuScan on Windows?
When you talk about Braille support, we do a couple of things with DocuScan. We do support being able to convert a document to BRF once it has been scanned. And if you have a Braille display that works with System Access, that same Braille display is also going to work for the DocuScan Plus interface.
And to change that, you have to go into preferences and set your Braille preferences because it's global.
Right.
And that's one of the tricks that some people didn't realize. We had what would happen is in one school, the actual BI teacher would scan it and then email the BRF file to somebody else after she had scanned it, or she would have them log in and be able to get that and do it themselves. But they had forgotten that she was using like 8-point and computer
Braille, and so somebody else was
so we had to go in and explain to them that it was global because it was one of those features to make it easier for the end user. But you might not know that if you're a professional trying to jump between grades back and forth. So just a tip.
Which Braille conversion are you using? Are you using Deep Ruby?
Yes, that's exactly what we're using.
In fact, we just upgraded to the latest version of that.
Right.
And our change log is, you can see a lot of that by going by doing modifier F and going to about.
Going to help and about, and you'll see the whole history of changes. So you can see, oh, we just upgraded the LibLui version. Oh, we just fixed something that Facebook broke. And you can have quite the time reading all that.
And remember that you're using the latest version. And especially with System Access, there isn't a software maintenance agreement. So everybody is on the latest version. If not, we'll help them get to the latest version. So you don't have to necessarily worry about that person was on version X or version Y. And we do that with a lot of our products in order to help with the troubleshooting and be able to allow that person to be able to learn from the community. Our users forum on SAMNet is a wonderful resource where sometimes those guys will answer questions before we can even get to them.
It's about time for us to wrap up and let the next people come in and kick us out. But for more information on any of our products, you can visit Serotek, Serotek.com. You're going to see little write-ups for each of the products we talked about today and even some that we didn't. Yes, we could have talked for hours and hours, but luckily for all of you, we did have to stop at some point. But we're happy to answer questions as you read about products that you're interested in and looking at price lists, whether it be buying something outright or buying something on monthly. Go ahead.
Do you have a booth?
We do not have a booth, actually.
Our booth is iBlink Radio.
Yeah.
We have a virtual booth.
Yes, correct.
There you go.
Because if you do want to hear us for hours and hours, you can find us through serotalk.com. Follow us on Twitter at Serotek, at Serotalk. And you can learn more about our products today.
I only did one.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Serotalk. Visit us at www.serotalk.com. Send us an email at resources@serotalk.com. Send us an iReport with iBlink Radio, available in the Apple App Store and the Android Market. Or leave a voicemail at 866-997-BLAB. That's 2522. We may read your email or play your voicemail in the next podcast. Join us next week as we explore all that life and the internet have to offer. Until then, may you have an accessible digital life.